Hey, everybody, I'm Evan Farmer, and welcome to Disaster Diaries. I'm here with my co-host, Andy, and we're here to interview people who have literally lost everything and survived to tell us how they rebuilt.
I'm Andy Krueger, the CEO of BuildSOS, a disaster resilience company, and we're diving into the human side of disaster recovery.
All right, so thanks for tuning in, and without further ado, let's jump into today's episode.
So, Mike, thanks for joining us. For everybody listening out there, Mike is actually one of the board members of BuildSOS. So he's been involved early on in BuildSOS and what we do and the mission and all that. So, Mike, the purpose of this, of course, being Disaster Diaries, is talking about what people have gone through. And I didn't realize when you put your hand up in the, you know, last week and said, hey, I'll come on. I didn't realize that you had gone through something. And I'm guessing it's hurricane related because you're in the New Orleans.
Oh, Katrina. Yeah. Katrina, yeah. And Rita. And, you know, but it's more than just that. Yeah. Because, you know, with the disaster fund, with the Louisiana Home Builders Disaster Fund, I've done things with that as well, just to get out to the community and feed the community. You know, so I've done that as well. So on the other side of it is just trying to give hope just from a response supporter. The last time the tornadoes came in Slidell a couple of years back, we were out there and we were cooking meals, and then they had the one that went through Laplace and went and cooked 1,500 meals or something in Laplace.
You've been disaster adjacent for a lot of disasters, but have you experienced a catastrophic loss directly?
So it's interesting for me is when Katrina came through Louisiana, I had moved to the North Shore. I had 17 pine trees in my backyard go down, one tree uprooted. We were gone for 2 weeks. And what was interesting, which I think my story is a little bit unique in this, is I was dealing with a local bank. I didn't have access to money.
What happened? Like, what damage did you sustain?
I was dealing with a local bank, and the local bank was shut down, flooded, no operations, no power, no nothing. And that's when I started banking with the National Bank. And it was you felt so helpless because I didn't have any way. You know, this is 20 years ago and stuff, and you had no money. Fortunately, I went to a friend's house, and we were so much better off than anybody else, but I didn't have any way to cash a check except for where we were. They didn't know me there. I had to set up a National Bank account, and that's when I started banking with Chase Bank, because then it's a national bank, but I didn't have access to my bank for over 3 weeks.
So you literally couldn't buy food.
Exactly.
Gah.
Exactly. Wow. You know, so, and that's a very different perspective than a lot of it. Yeah. I mean, I had to go back to my house and couldn't see into my backyard, couldn't do all that stuff. And where we live, Andy, as you know, is the pine trees are just plentiful, and everybody around us, you know, so we're all going in, emptying out everybody's refrigerators because that's all gone. All the food in the refrigerators are gone. Everything is gone. And so when we got back, we had to start. And it was like, so where do we start? And this goes back to my opinion. When I do my talks about disasters and things of that nature, the thing that I believe everybody's got to do is take a breath. Your life's turned upside down, but what you have to have happen is you got to take a breath and you have to start. And you can't be so overwhelmed. And that's what happens is people get overwhelmed when their whole life is impacted. I mean, I can tell you, I broke down feeling totally lost. I couldn't get in touch with my parents, couldn't get in touch with my brothers and sisters. No cell phones were working from where, because I was in a different place. All our cell phones were down out of New Orleans and all the towers were down. I couldn't communicate with anybody. I was up in Natchitoches. I had to go buy a cell phone from Walmart. And that was only good whenever somebody could get a signal. I couldn't bank. I had to depend on a friend of mine to use his office to have a check sent from my company to there so I could establish a banking account. We didn't know where to shop. We didn't know where to go, just for our own survival for those 2 weeks while we were gone.
I'm curious, though. So you're talking about after, right? But anything that you want to talk about in terms of anticipation of the storm? I mean, you were out of town. Did you leave because you thought it was going to be bad? I mean, was it?
You know, and I'll tell people all the time, I'd much prefer to deal with a hurricane than an earthquake or tornado or a snowstorm or something like that. Why? Because we know it's coming. We know it's coming. But the thing is we haven't been scared by earthquakes in a long time until Katrina came. And then everybody got really scared. And my friend called me and says, hey, are you evacuating? And then we look at the TV. It's like, holy crud, that's the entire Gulf of Mexico is taken up. And so then we went ahead and we bailed. were stuck in contraflow traffic. We were stuck in traffic for hours upon hours. Yeah, I had two cars because I had to go pick up my daughter up at LSU. And she doesn't want to go. So I'm dealing with a rebellious teenager just starting dental hygiene school at LSU. You know, so many different things that the variables. So for me, it was realizing how bad it was potentially going to be. And we were right smack in the middle of it. And so you have anxiety with that. So you do have anxiety with that. It's like, oh my gosh, what do I do? And so we did. We evacuated. I had to get my mother-in-law. And we did all that stuff. I told my mom and dad where to go. And I'm dealing with my family, but I'm also trying to help my mom and dad and navigate to different areas and weren't enough places and stuff. And that's part of it. People don't have a plan in advance. Did we? No. Well, kind of did, because of the guy who I knew said, hey, if you ever need something, give me a shout. I got a camp up in Natchitoches where you can come. Julia Roberts stayed at his camp for Steel Magnolias. But that's where I was, where they filmed Steel Magnolias up in that area.
And she wasn't there when you were there, huh?
No.
Oh, well.
But I mean, that's where we went. And he was real gracious and he brought everything to us. He stocked up his refrigerator. He stocked up two refrigerators for us. He left at 1 o'clock in the morning. We got there around 3 a.m. And he says, hey, the key is on the pole. Just get the key and let yourself in. And the next day he made sure that we cooked some chickens. And because you're just kind of getting there at 3 a.m, you're frazzled, you unpack dog, kids, mother-in-law, and putting people where they need to be and things like that. So we weren't ready. Did as much as we could, but we weren't ready for that type of a situation. We weren't ready for it. So knowing in advance is a huge thing, and the things that you have to know. Money. Now I keep cash in my safety deposit box, you know, my safe. I keep cash there. But I mean, these are all things that you don't think about. You just don't think about these things, you know, and we talk about, yeah, you have your meds and all this other stuff, but nobody really talks about that stuff, you know? So where are you going to go? You have your meds, but do you have copies of your prescriptions to do that? Because it's not like you could possibly call your doctor because they may not be there.
As you're going around, ferrying around, picking up people, picking up your daughter, picking up, you think you said your parents or so, as you're going to essentially extract people, are you taking a moment at each stop to say, did you grab your documents? Do you have your meds? I mean, was there any kind of, or was it just like knock on the door, grab your bag, we're out of here? Like, what was that like?
Kind of what it is, kind of what it was. We didn't know. We didn't know the things to do. You know, I went through Hurricane Betsy many years ago, probably before you were born. I can remember flooded the city. Also, not quite as bad, but I can remember my dad going out in the eye of the hurricane to try to pull up a for sale sign out front of our house because he didn't want it to pop up and hit the house. And I remember that. I remember going through Camille, which was further east of us, but I remember the devastation. I drove through the devastation. I drove through there after the devastation for all the hurricanes on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. And as much as we do PBAs and we tell people that you need to be prepared and you do these things, you're not. People just don't, because now I think it'll change now because we did have a Camille. We did have a Katrina. We did have Rita. We have had serious storms that affected Lake Charles and the different areas now. So people, I think, are a little bit more aware now than they were before. And especially reliving all the stuff with the last week being the week of Katrina. You know, the 29th was the 20-year anniversary of Katrina. And so they've been posting that on TV all week and what these people went through and what they did. So I think by doing that, people are more aware now that if they, you hope that if they get a notice now, they do more than they did before.
You know, it's funny, as I listen to you talk, we had a disaster, not a disaster, potential disaster recently. You know, the power went out. They thought it might be, you know, the grid exploding, you know, whether it was a terrorism thing. And we didn't know if we were going to have power for 10 days, right? And I was so unprepared. I didn't have the cash. All the things that you're talking about. What we did have were friends and social capital. And it sounds like that's kind of what saved you in Katrina, where you had these great friends that you could, you know, somehow communicate with at, you know, different points. But you, with no money, you end up in, you know, Julia Roberts, you know, house. That's what I've turned this into, by the way, in my head for you. But it sounds like the social capital, I still don't see people preparing. You have prepared a little bit more, and I have had a fire, and I still don't have photos of my belongings, and I know I've been through it. It's human nature, which is just terrifying to admit.
And I think I'm more prepared than I was since SOS, since we did all this stuff. I know I'm more prepared now than I was before. I know I am, because now I do know the things that I need to do. I do know that I have to have cash. I do know that I have to have my cell phones and chargers. I have a generator, not a whole house generator, but I have generators to stand by and I'm prepared. I know when a hurricane's coming, I go and I get gas for my vehicles and I get gas for the generators. And I'll usually keep 15 gallons of gas. That'll get me a period of time. And the things that you learn after is you don't have to run your generators 24/7. You learn these things after experience these stuff. The last hurricane that came through when we lost power for 3 days, you know, I was fortunately, I had my generators. I had two generators. One was an inverter, which I could do my electronic refrigerator that had all the, you know, electronics on it. So I could plug that in with the inverter. And the other one, I had a portable air conditioning unit that I plugged into a window in my den and 8 of us sleeping on the sofas and on the floor in my den. But at least I had cold water. At least I had some of these things. But it's not just that. Getting back to Katrina, though, and you're right, it's the social part of it that people take for granted, is my friend who I went and stayed with said, hey, look, I'm going to come help you. And I said, you don't need to. And he goes, no, I'm coming. You're not telling me. He came with a tractor and he says, do you need anything? And I'm going, no, I don't need anything. And then I called him back and I said, yeah, I do. I said, I need chainsaw blades and I need alcohol.
And bourbon, I was going to say.
And that's what he brought. He brought a 64-quart ice chest full of booze and stuff like that.
You still have all your fingers and toes?
Yeah. Well, again, we took 17 trees out. I had 6 feet of debris out front of my house twice, across 90 feet by 6 feet, twice. And it came to is, so how do you start recovering from this? How do you start? Where do you go? What do you do? It's the old adage is you just take one step at a time. And my wife, I actually went out of town to get my instructor's class to be able to be an instructor for NAHB after Katrina. He says she's crying and he's talking to a neighbor in the street. He says, where do you start? And he goes, with one pine cone at a time.
For the people at home, what's NAHB?
NAHB, National Association of Home Builders.
Just an interesting backstory on this is, so Mike is very involved with the building industry and also a little bit the insurance industry. Right? You spent some time in insurance. Yeah. So I'm curious, with that knowledge and expertise, insurance obviously is all about risk and risk reduction and recognizing that you have a risk and paying something now to reduce potential risk later, right? So it's that entire field that we were just talking about in terms of people taking a small action to avoid a bigger problem. Does that experience or did that experience give you any additional insight into the human mind around risk recognition and addressing that?
I've had my general liability license for 23 years, roughly. I didn't do anything with it other than talk to sell. I got it because I needed to have it for the job that I had. So I wasn't using it. I didn't pay a whole lot of attention. I just got it. But since then, you have to realize, and I didn't know, I wasn't paying attention to my deductibles, you know, $500 deductible, $1,000 deductible, 1%, 2%. Didn't have a clue what any of that stuff meant. But nowadays, you really do have to understand what these things are. Because if somebody told me just the other day, he's got a 10% deductible on an expensive home. So his deductible on an $800,000 home is $80,000 out of his pocket. And you think that he may not have $80,000 worth of damage. He may have $40,000, but he's got to come out with $80,000 before they pay a nickel. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And so that's some of the stuff that I learned. One of the things that I learned is we had a great deductible. We had a $1,000 deductible through Horseman Teachers Insurance Program because my wife was a teacher. And so $1,000 deductible. Well, I go 18 years paying more on my insurance policy to keep my $1,000 deductible, where I could have gone with a 1% deductible. A 1% deductible on a $400,000 house is a whole lot less after 15 years because I'm paying an extra $1,000 or $1,500 a year. Never thought about it that way. So you have to start thinking about things totally different. And, you know, the sad thing, the people that get affected the most, it's the shame because they stereotype this, especially in New Orleans area, is the poor. Poor people aren't the only ones who get affected. It's everybody gets affected. And unfortunately, that's what you see a lot of, is they go to the poor areas and they say, how are the poor people affected? Well, you know, and it's true. Look, they don't have the wherewithal to do the things that I can do. I was very blessed, again, because, like you mentioned, my relationship with the National Association of Home Builders and my involvement on a national scale, I had people calling me from around the country saying, Mike, if you need to have a place to stay, come. We'll take your whole family. I had a builder in Shreveport, Louisiana, which is 5 hours north of us, say, I'll take my spec home off of the market. I'll take as many as I need to house your family. We just need to go find some beds and stuff. Not many people have that, where people you can go and people are willing to do this stuff because of the industry that we're in, which is why I really like this industry and why I think it makes sense that builders should build, builders should rebuild. Communities should use the people that built the communities to rebuild the communities. I'm a firm believer in that. And that's why I think that SOS is the mission is to say, hey, let's get the people who understand this, who built these homes, to rebuild these homes. Let's get these people to help rebuild the communities that they live in, because they live in these communities. So that's why it's a passion for me, because too many people don't know what to do when somebody comes in and takes advantage of them. And that's one of the things we realized, the amount of fraud that was out there, billions of dollars of fraud that the national government expects to write off after a natural disaster.
And that's really what Build SOS kind of was born out of, if I'm not mistaken, was to vet contractors for homeowners so that they don't get taken to the cleaners by some fly-by-night, you know, roofer or whatever. And so you get a card, or you get, there's a database where you can say, hey, look, are you on this? Are you real?
I'm a huge proponent of the card, the contractor. To me, I think that makes the best sense in the world. Alabama has a contractor's license, a card, and I think that's a fantastic thing. Anybody can say they're a contractor. Anybody can say they're a contractor. All they got to do is go pass a test, and they pay the money. So you pay your money, you pass the test, I'm a contractor, and you got to pay your insurance. You don't have to keep it up. And here's what's interesting. I can take my commercial contractor's license test and become a commercial contractor and not have general liability insurance.
I don't even have to do any of that, and I can call myself a contractor if I just show up at your door and knock, right? I could have basic familiarity with what a hammer is, and if I want to defraud you, I can show up and take advantage of that and have you sign paperwork.
Your insurance? Sure, I got insurance. You know, I've been having insurance for 40 years. Yeah, I've been driving for 40 years. I've got insurance. Right. People just don't understand these things, and that's where I think that our mission and these disaster diaries come in, and I think it makes sense to be able to put things out there and say, these are the things you have to think about before and after. You think about, who am I going to call if I have a problem beforehand? Where do I get that information? Who am I going to call? Where do I find that information? And if we can get that Build SOS name out there, then all of a sudden they say, okay, at least I know a place where I can go.
Because there's other resources too, like the insurance process that you guys have where you can input your insurance. And again, correct me if I'm off base here, but you put in your insurance policy and it says, look, for your area, you're pretty well insured, but did you know you probably should use this because your neighbors do that, or your deductible is way too high? Maybe you can't afford this house. Maybe even before you buy a house, you could use that resource and be like, great house, love it and everything. But by the time I add in my insurance policy, which I'll need because I'm prone to fires, tornadoes, whatever, this thing's going to price me out. So maybe I want to adjust it, because it sounds to me like the front end is you do all that heavy work. It's like the three little pigs, right? You build your house of brick, and then, you know, all that huffing and puffing, you're stoked. But the resources on the front end from Build SOS can help prevent it. And then when you're in the position like I was, your house is like in ashes or in Katrina, and you're like, what do I do? Then there's also the resources there to answer that question. This is how I approach the next step of recovery.
Yeah, you're exactly right. So yeah, so you're describing the policy advisor and then the disaster advisor. And we built it exactly for the reasons that Mike is talking about. Specifically talking about the disaster advisor, it's because we spent years trying to figure out how to bring people to resources, right? So Build SOS isn't necessarily about creating all the solutions. There are so many good people out there, good organizations, educational organizations, tech organizations, community organizations, nonprofits, I mean, even the government and for-profits. They're amazing. So we don't feel like we necessarily need to go in and try to reinvent what they're doing. But what we want to do and where we see the gap is that it's almost like too much information, right? So you're in this place after a disaster where you're already kind of fried, right? You're emotionally fried. You have trouble trusting yourself, right? What the next step is. So it's not about the resources being there. It's about taking those first couple of steps to break that inertia and say, okay, well, here's what you do next, right? You talked about the pine cones. Go pick up the pine cones, right? Go do that first thing that you can do to shake you out of that inertia and to start taking the path towards recovery and understanding what's out there that you have. So what Disaster Advisor does is our chatbot that you just go on, like you'd get on any AI chatbot, and just say, what do I do now, right? I don't even know what I should start doing. And it'll walk you through not only what you might be able to do next, but it'll bring you to resources that are out there that can help you take those next steps. So yeah, absolutely.
It's a cooler full of beer and a chainsaw if you input that.
That's what my chatbot was.
That's why our terms and conditions are so strong. No liability.
You know, it was crazy. It ended up when everybody came back home, my parents were living with me and all this other stuff. We had 1 pound of ground meat. When the store opened up, we could buy 1 pound of ground meat for 10 people. My dad's job was to go in his car and go get ice and water every day. He'd get 2 cases of water and 2 bags of ice every day. That was my dad's job for 2 weeks. Well, we recovered one house at a time. And to your point, you know, you go to the advisor and stuff, and it says on that stuff, it says, you know what? Yeah, you start calling these contractors. You don't just hire the first one. You call and get bids, and you make sure you got to do your due diligence with that stuff. And people don't understand. You know, they're so desperate. They're so desperate for help that they don't know where to turn. And hopefully with what we've created is that gives them an opportunity to use that. It's to say, okay, call your insurance agent. By the way, tell your agent and tell the adjuster that you've got these pictures because you already got this stuff. You happen to see this. You took the pictures of the inside of the house. You took the pictures of the outside of the house. So when it comes time for a claim, that adjuster can get your claim done very quickly because you were prepared, because you were ready for this thing. And they're going to want to do as many of those as they possibly can. If you can show pictures and proof, proof is in the pudding, you know, there it is. Here's the picture of the house before. See how the side of this house is gone now? Yeah, that's what it looked like before and after. Really did have a 65-inch TV here. Most people want to just get back into their house. Unfortunately, a lot of people who got money from the government didn't necessarily get back in their house. They got that money and got themselves a new Cadillac. Barely managed to come by and make their house partially livable again. That's not what it's about.
So, Mike, did you see, and Evan, I was going to ask you if you saw, in the last week, I watched that Come Hell and High Water documentary, no, Katrina, on Netflix.
I clicked to watch it and I'm not there yet. I'm like, this is not going to be good for me to go to sleep after I watch this. It's going to bring back too many memories.
It is so good. And the footage is new footage. A lot of it is, I mean, of course, they got the reels from TV and all that, but a lot of it is, first off, I was telling my wife after I watched it, I'm like, I can't believe how crappy video was just 20 years ago. Like 2005, I thought, it would look like it was like VHS.
Grainy.
But one of the things that struck me of all of the incredible elements of the documentary was that I didn't know this, that when insurance companies came in afterwards and were offering settlement checks, they had different per square foot reimbursements based on your neighborhood. So if you were in the lower ninth ward, they'd say, okay, you get $150 per square foot to rebuild. But if you were in the Garden District, they're like, okay, you're going to get $350 or $400. As the person in the documentary said, you're buying the same materials. You're going to the same home.
Right.
It doesn't cost anything any different to build in this neighborhood versus that one. Now, there might be a difference in the value of the house when you're done. But the fact that insurance companies were like, yeah, y'all only need $150 per square foot because your house is going to be worth less. Where's the logic?
Well, there wasn't. You see, that's just it. That's where I think the government wasn't prepared for anything like this with FEMA. And then Superstorm Sandy was better because it had gone through Katrina. We've come ages beyond that at this point. People have become more aware that, you know, the cost to build is the same no matter where you are. Although the labor cost may be different, but the product cost is virtually the same.
Can you fight that? If you're in the lower ninth ward, for example, and they're only offering you 105 and you're like, look, I know somebody up there. He's getting 370.
Well, you see, nowadays, I think it's not that. That's what it was. Like Andy was saying, that's what it was for Katrina. I don't think it's like that anymore. You know, labor in Texas is cheaper than labor in Louisiana.
And labor in the Garden District, I mean, you're only talking about like a 10-minute drive.
Yeah, you see, and that's where it was wrong. It was wrong. It was absolutely wrong. That's why they were using these metrics that didn't exist. It wasn't real. And that's part of the whole problem was there was no checks and balances to it. They should have never done that stuff. They shouldn't have given money to so many people that got money. And they didn't have a checks and balance system in this thing. Show me that you made the repairs. They didn't do that. They wrote checks and tried to make the problem go away with money.
I mean, we just saw that a couple of years ago, a COVID payroll protection plan, right? How much fraud was there in there? How many people came out of the woodwork and were like, oh, you know what? I run a company with 300 people in it and they're all, I need to have this reimbursed. So same old story.
It's unfortunately, you got a bunch of people who don't like to live by the laws of the land, but you know, that's the greed that comes into people, unfortunately. We're more prepared now to handle certain things than we were before. Like Home Depot has built facilities now in certain areas that they're more ready in an event something comes. They can be prepared with their emergency response team. So many people didn't have those things before. Cajun Navy never existed before. So, you know, now they're doing all sorts of different things. There was somebody was missing on Lake Pontchartrain. The sailboat hit the bridge over the weekend. Cajun Navy's out there trying to find one of the bodies still. That's not their job, but they're out there doing that. But now that's another resource that is available to us that we didn't have before. Just like SOS is a resource now that didn't exist before. Right. You know, the disaster diaries, the advisor, and all these things didn't exist before. For now, we got to figure out ways to get it to the people to say, guys, there are ways for you to be prepared now. You just have to do it. I think the insurance industry is a huge component of disaster recovery. And the reason I say so is because they're the ones who control the checks. That's who people pay. My insurance went down almost $4,000 a year because I got a fortified roof. Fortunately, I knew a roofer who gave me a break on it. I got a break on the materials because I knew the supplier. And I also got a break on the roof because the guy's a good friend of mine and I've sent a lot of business his way. So I got a reduced rate. I'm one of the lucky ones who was able to do that.
Yeah.
But still, the cost for me to save that over 5 years, that's $20,000 over 5 years that I'm going to save because I spent $2,000 extra putting a fortified roof on my house.
Well, that pencils. That's a no-brainer. I mean, you talk about building a house in Tennessee, where I'm from, for example. If you build it out of ICF, insulated concrete forms, it's basically tornado-proof. But right. You're looking at a 10 to 15 build cost per square foot. And people will step over that dollar to pick up that nickel, you know, and I've been guilty of it, too. And I'm not throwing anybody else under the bus. And not everybody has that extra 15 to 20%. And builders who are building the spec homes aren't going to do that because they're in there for the profit margin. The technologies, the fortified roof, basically, for those who don't know, pretty much keeps your roof on in a hurricane or even in a tornado. It gives you a better shot. It's not going to blow off. And that's where people get sucked out and concrete homes and raising buildings up in water prone areas. All these things, there's ways to make a house even resilient, almost fireproof. You see it right. In California with the wealthier homes that have been built since the last fire, essentially, they're still standing and they have all kinds of different technologies in place, but not everybody knows about it. Not everybody can afford it. And not everybody believes they can afford it, even though if they just built a smaller house that was built that way or built a smaller house, they could get that extra protection.
So that's where I think that the insurance, that's why I say the insurance are the ones who really hold the cards on this, is they're the ones who have to say, and it's so funny, you go up to Tennessee and you say, do y'all build fortified? You go, we don't have a clue what you're talking about. For what does that mean? It means a tighter envelope. Why do I need to have a tighter envelope? You know, and what does it do? Most people don't realize is most of the damage after hurricanes comes from water. After the roof gets pulled off, it's the rain that comes in. It's the water that comes in and does the damage. It's not just the roof going off. That's only part of it. It's all the damage to the inside because of the water. So if you can prevent that roof from going off because of paying a little bit of extra money with doing a little bit better job of tightening up that envelope. But the insurance companies, like in Louisiana, they said, okay, if you build a fortified roof, you're getting a discount. Well, what kind of discount? Well, that's where they come short. They don't say, well, you're going to get a 15% discount or 10% or 20%. They can say, well, we're going to save you 10 bucks. They're the ones who control all this stuff. They're the ones who say, you have to have so much insurance on these houses nowadays. My house is paid off. I don't have to have insurance. Silly not to, but I don't have to. I have flood insurance. House is never flooded. I'm not in an area that's ever flooded. I'm not going to be the one who didn't pay that $1,000 a year and have it flood on me.
I want to go back a second ago to what you were saying about resources that are available now that weren't available then. You talked about disaster diaries, like what we're on right now, and it reminded me that of something that actually happened today. So I have an old friend who she started up years ago a company called StoryKeep, and her name is Jamie Yanger, and she's the founder of it. And what StoryKeep does is it's aimed at capturing legacy stories, family stories, right? Like the story of a family. And it could be about one person, it could be about the whole lineage, it could be about all kinds of things. And mostly she has a lot of clients that are in companies, right? So they want to capture the granddad story who started the widget company that now is like huge, and it becomes part of the brand and part of the story. And so she posted something on LinkedIn today about the importance of stories in companies, right? For the productivity and the efficiency of a company. And I don't usually comment on LinkedIn, but I had to jump in there and said, absolutely, right? Those stories are as old as language. And I would argue even that language came about because we needed something to tell stories, right? We need to convey
way to tell the story.
Probably in a story form, like, you know, hey, this is the kind of animal you want to go kill, or, you know, watch out for that plant, don't eat that, you'll die. But the stories are so important. They educate, they bring people together. And I think that they can run end runs in your head around all those psychological blocks about it's not going to happen to me, you know, it doesn't matter. It's if you're hearing stories about it and you're hearing what happened to other people and you're hearing about what they did right and what they did wrong and their experiences with all of the different stakeholders you deal with after a storm, you might be that much more likely to say, okay, I'm going to take some action. So, I mean, that was a little shout out to Jamie because what she's doing is amazing. But also, I think that that's why storytelling is such a unique and important piece of this, right? Because if you hear a story about a loss, like, so for instance, just we had somebody on the show not too long ago who said their insurance policy ran out like the day that the disaster happened. And they had to get on the phone in or right after the disaster and say, I got to make sure that my check is going, I'm not going to hang up until you tell me, you know, and send me a confirmation that my policy is renewed. Somebody hearing that who's viscerally in that story is going to say, oh, shoot, I got to put mine on auto pay for 3 weeks before it's due. Right. So it's those little baby steps and pieces of the story. I think it's so important.
It creates an aha moment from a reality. You know, when somebody tells a story, people go, I got to prepare for that. I got to make sure that I'm aware of that. Because, look, I just found out that when my daughter lives, she didn't have insurance. It got canceled. And we're in hurricane season. I'm going, oh, my goodness, I got to get this thing fixed. So, yeah, I had that exact situation with my daughter and my grandkids live around the corner from us. And I found out they don't have insurance on their home. And I go, how did this happen? I didn't get a notification of it. All of a sudden, I get an email saying that the policy's canceled. And I'm going, like, when was it canceled? Last year. And wow. So now I'm stuck with a high premium because it wasn't insured for a year. And I have to do it. I have to get coverage. It's like, are you kidding me? And it's little things. It's those little bitty things that you don't think about that you say, make sure your policy's up to date. What about if it cancels when you're gone, if you have to evacuate? Make sure it's prepared. Make sure you're prepared to handle. Just like you said, Andy, is you got to make sure those things are ready to be handled in advance. And so that checklist, you know, they talk about the batteries and the flashlights and all that other kind of stuff. Yeah, I agree with all that. And that's been pushed into our heads, but we don't push into the heads is make sure your policy is in place, is up to date. It's got the coverages that you need, that your deductible is not so absurd that you can't afford to start your repairs or anything. Like, you got to figure out what it is before you know where to go. If there's a place, and I'm hoping that Build.SOS is that place that people can come to that says, help me figure out what I need to do before it comes. Give me the direction after it's time for me to recover from the situation. What insurance companies do I call? Who do I call? You know, can I go do an independent adjuster? What, how does that change me? How does that benefit me? And just like Andy said, did you input your stuff into your policy advisor? Did you put that stuff in? Did you check it and see? Let's evaluate where you are. And we're not going to tell you what to do, but we're going to give you some suggestions. We're here to help.
Yeah, Mike, you're in a unique position because you've been disaster adjacent to so many different situations. And then, of course, you know, on the board for Build SOS and your mission. We ask everybody that we interview the same question, and it's really interesting, and I'm really curious to hear what your take is. It is, what do you say to somebody, and this is not in preparation, but what do you say to somebody 5 minutes after they lost their house?
Take a breath. Easy to say, hard to do. It's going to be okay, but don't overreact. It's a hard thing for people to accept. You lost your house. We can't change that. But let's take a breath and figure out the best way to take a step forward, to pick up that one pine cone, because you've got people who are here to help you. Like you say, your social environment, your social determinant.
I call it social capital. It's capital, like a social form capital. Of capital. You don't have money, but you got a friend with Julia Roberts sleeping in the bed.
You know, you got somebody that you can say, hey, look, what do I do? Look, I'm here. Let's just take a breath. You know, it's when somebody dies. What do you say to somebody? I haven't been there, but I'm here for you if you need me. I'm here. I'm here to help. Just tell me how I can help. Take a breath. Step back a second. And let's figure out a way to move forward.
You know, it's interesting because older fellows like us, I mean, we've lived a long life, and I can't name a person that I know that's my age that hasn't had some equivalent of disaster, whether it's their home or family tragedy or something. And you really do learn that, you know, you will get through it. And that's such great advice, because when you're young, everything is the end of the world. I was significantly younger when my house burned down, and I was even younger when Katrina happened. And I really did think those two things were going to ruin everything for me. I had several homes in New Orleans, and it was the beginning of my real estate empire, and gone just like that overnight. But you just pick up that first pine cone, which I love. Maybe that's the name of the episode. But you pick up that first pine cone, you help out your neighbor, you make sure that your family knows you're okay. I love that. I mean, because really, there is nothing else to do in that moment. The resources, Build SOS is one of the better ones right now that I know of, because it's all privatized right now, I think, to some degree. Yeah. The government is not going to be your solution, be all end all anymore, if it ever was, to be fair. And so you really need to reach out to all those resources. So thank you for being a big part of creating a solution for people like us.
Absolutely. All right, guys.
All right. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to Disaster Diaries. And if you're moved by these stories that you've heard, please subscribe, leave a review, and share the show with someone that you think needs it. And to tell your own story, download the Disaster Diaries app, available at all app stores, or visit disasterdiaries.com. And if you're looking for help rebuilding, check out buildsos.com for support, tools, and resources to help you better prepare for, respond to, and recover from disasters.